Please be seated. One day in 2005, I was sitting in the dining room of the Ranchman's Club in Calgary, which is a private club like the Union Club. Its dining room reminiscent of those grand old CP Hotel dining rooms. I was waiting there for a colleague to join me for lunch. And seated at the table beside me was a man named Jim Dinning. And in addition to his business career in Calgary, he had served for several terms as an MLA in the provincial legislature and had performed successfully for a while as the provincial treasurer. Alberta had experienced progressive conservative lockdown on provincial politics for a long, long time. Since 1971, when the late Peter Lougheed was elected premier, who was then followed by Don Getty, and then in 1992 by Ralph Klein. By 2005, it seemed to be the prevailing opinion in Alberta that it was time for Ralph to move along. And so the positioning for who would be the next conservative premier in the province had begun. Mr. Dinning was joined by two men, one of whom is now a senator in Ottawa, and the three of them were planning Mr. Dinning's move to the head of the Conservative Party and into the Premier's office. The conversation was fascinating, particularly as I listened to them talking about the logistical details about who was to call who, how we were going to exercise influence in this part of the province, and all that sort of thing. I promise I wasn't trying to listen. Okay, maybe I moved just a little to the left so that... because it was so interesting. And when the conversation moved to the policy topics that would occupy Dinning's platform, then I was really getting interested. I almost wanted to move my chair to their table because I had some insights that I thought would be useful to share. Has this ever happened to you? Whether at a restaurant or at the airport, in a shopping mall, at the office, where you're overhearing someone else's conversation. It's not about you. You're not addressed in any particular way. And yet, as you listen, you begin to get an idea of what's going on, who's involved, and if you listen long enough, pretty soon you're developing a position yourself on what's being talked about. Has this ever happened to you? Well, it happened to all of us this morning, just a few moments ago, as we were hearing the words from Luke's Gospel, because you see, this is always our initial posture with readings from Scripture. We are overhearing. And in this case, we're overhearing Jesus tell his disciples a parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray. But Luke sets it up by saying he told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. So in fact, our overhearing is twice removed. We're overhearing Luke's congregation who themselves are overhearing Jesus tell a parable long before to his disciples. Now initially, we may feel the distance between then and now, and why not? We're listening to ancient material that's been around for a long time. But as my experience 15 years ago at the Ranchman Club demonstrates, it doesn't take too long before we are drawn into the conversation, drawn into the story, and our overhearing begins to move towards hearing. And eventually, we may even feel like we are being spoken to directly. Now, my first question is, why did Luke preserve this story? Why did he preserve this parable for his congregation? What was going on in his community that he thought would be addressed by a tax collector and a Pharisee? Well, he did say that he was going to address contemptuous disregard of others expressed by the religiously upright. Now, as we know, religious communities are not immune to the attitudes and behaviors that seem contrary, actually, to our essential values of peace and kindness and generosity and openness and compassion, the very attitudes that we claim to be central to our identity. Many years ago, I was speaking with a psychiatrist who himself was a devout Anglican, who said to me, the coldest place on planet Earth is the narthex of an Anglican church. Now, this has not been my experience, but it has been the experience of some. So what really strikes me in this story is Luke's fondness for outsiders, who's used by Jesus to teach us something about who we're called to be. The tax collector was absolutely despised by the people of his own community. He was socially isolated because he was religiously unclean. Why? Because he was working for the oppressor that did nasty, nasty, cruel things to his people. But he worked for them. A few months ago, we heard Jesus tell a story about love of neighbor, and the central character was a Samaritan, which may not mean much to us now. That's a long ago kind of person. But it was another despised class of persons, anathema to a good Jew like Jesus, allowing for the expression of all of the religious bigotry that you can imagine being given voice to. And he was going to demonstrate love of neighbor? And then a month ago, we heard a story about a dishonest steward who, at the hands of Jesus, demonstrated unconventional ways of living in the kingdom. A couple of weeks ago, it was a leper, the ultimate definition of unwelcome outsider, who taught the people of God what faith is, what praise is, what thanksgiving is. Last week, it was a widow, consigned to poverty by the laws of patriarchal culture, and today, a tax collector, outsiders, all of them. Who are the outsiders for us, here now in our time? And do they have anything to offer our understanding of who we are called to be and what we are called to do? These two questions of identity and purpose, so central now to our congregational exploration of greater works than these. Identity and purpose. Who are we? What are we called to do? So many good ideas have been generated and many good questions. And some of the answers we hold. But my hunch is that what we seek may also be out there. Canon Ian Alexander provided an article to Diocesan Council, which met here yesterday in the chapter room, written by Ron Rollheiser, a Roman Catholic author, who speaks about the necessity of our mission to secularity. We all know that we live in a secular age, in a secular culture. We are influenced by its images and messages all of the time. And what will this new kind of missionary need to bring to that world in which we live? Real faith and an openness to discover faith outside the familiar confines of our religious community, because God so loved the world. God is living and active in the world. Can we see the signs of that presence and activity? Because God is not limited to the life of the church. Rollheiser says what we need are people who can walk the workplace, the marketplace, the Academy of Learning, the arts and entertainment industry, the gym, and all the places where we have fun, and radiate a faith that is truly incarnational, making present the reality of the divine, and seeing the presence of God everywhere, a faith that is mature and open and colorful and interesting. And that faith must be strong enough not to be defensive in the face of secularity, the world in which we live. And it also must be secure enough to carry on for the long haul, to be steadfast. Because the transformation that we seek always exists between the already and the not yet. So this is what I'm hearing today, stimulated by this long ago ancient wisdom teaching of Jesus. The outsiders have something to teach us about the place of God's activity in the world. We have something to offer our world precisely because we are dedicated to honoring and celebrating that presence. You may have been hearing other things. Those are the things that I was hearing. So for your hearing and my hearing and our hearing, we give thanks be to God.